Welcome to Showdown. I'm Mark Kaysen, and this is, of course, day seven of Donald Trump's trial. I have to laugh. Last week was supposed to be 3 weeks, but it ended up being just one. And here we are on the 15th of April. That was the beginning. So here we are on the 22nd. So that's a week into this thing. We've got a jury, 12 jurors, six alternates. Now, the truth is, many of the people on the jury at this moment, like those who quit, there were a couple who quit, they're all fearful. And they should be. Because a very dangerous man is attempting to really intimidate them. And tomorrow, there's a hearing that's going to deal with that attempted intimidation because the judge wanted to be careful. He's being very cautious, as has every judge who has dealt with this since the beginning, except for the one judge who is in Donald Trump's pocket. And, of course, that's Aileen Cannon. And so that's the only one that has not been cautious. She's been outrageous. And she's going to have to deal with that in a moment as well, because there are charges that are being brought slowly, carefully, but they're going to be on the table, because the one thing that clearly Jack Smith is not going to do, he is not going to wait until the last minute and take the chance that Aileen Cannon will just, in front of the jury, dismiss the case, and that'll be the end of the whole thing. He knows better, because Aileen Cannon has already told everybody, I'm going to take care of Donald. Donald, just hang on, wait till the jury's impaneled, and then we'll fix this whole thing. That fix is the problem. That fix is going to be handled, and it'll be in Jack Smith's time. It's coming close to the point where that will be dealt with. And that's a good thing. So in the meantime, here we are. We've got a real trial underway, opening statements today. And pretty funny, Donald Trump's attorney basically said something very clearly. He said that there's no way that anything wrong has been done, that in fact, all Donald Trump was doing was what anyone in a democracy would do, is try to influence an election and win. Of course, we have problems with that in our system, because there are limits to how much money you can donate to campaigns, and $130,000 payments aren't going to cut it to Stormy Daniels. And then there are other issues as well. Karen McDougal is baked into this thing. And anybody that doesn't want to hear it, I mean, you can do something very easy. You can just put your hands over your ears and go, la, 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 la. And then you won't have to worry about hearing anything. And you also won't have to worry about hearing the sentencing, which should be coming in right now. It's looking like this is going quickly. It could be 5 weeks. Might be. So in 5 weeks, Donald Trump could be sentenced to probably about 4 years in jail. And the reason that it would be so small is because, although the 34 counts, by the way, guys, do you know there's no audio?
Yeah, I'm working on it now.
Oh, okay.
I was suspecting that, but it's recording, so keep
it's
going.
It's recording, but he said no audio, but you're recording audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all good.
Live audio might be going.
Okay.
Okay.
No problem, guys. There is another problem, but we'll fix that after the show. So,
okay.
Anyway, so, yeah, a few little technical difficulties here. That's pretty normal for the world. You know, things happen. But, yeah, that's there's a short in that wire. It's hitting my ears crazy, yeah. It's making me nuts trying to deal. I'll handle it, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm tough. Yeah, don't worry. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. Okay, so, you know, we're working through. Look, they moved some things around. You can't even tell, which is good you can't tell. But just things have to be hooked up properly, and they will be. They will be. Believe me, this studio will be operating on full tilt when Donald Trump is in jail, at which time he'll be running for office. But of course, as I always say, it'll be for the presidency of the Prisoners Association. And that's good. I hope he wins. I'm going to support him for that. I think he's certainly the man for the job. And by the way, speaking of the man for the job, let's talk about Speaker Johnson for a little bit, because there's nothing much to say about Donald today. He's in trouble. He's going down quickly. The stories being told in the court are clearly just one thing. The law. Follow the law. If you follow the law, everything works out fine. If you try to make up all kinds of stories, well, you can talk yourself into it. And perhaps if you're Donald Trump, you can sleep through it. And then maybe you can sleep through the 4 years of your sentence. And then when you come out, you'll be all rested. And that's fine. But let me talk about Speaker Johnson, because I have a slight problem with some of what has been said. And yet, on the other hand, I understand that that Mike Johnson, in the end, did the right thing. I get it. And a lot of people are saying that they're proud of him for doing the right thing. However, the problem is simple. The right thing is not what he wanted to do. It's not what he did all along, which, by the way, it didn't come without a cost. What he did, which was so wrong, it ended up a giant cost of life to people in Ukraine. People in Ukraine died by huge numbers. It wasn't 10, it wasn't 100. It was more than 1,000. It was numbers. People died in Ukraine because Michael Johnson decided early on that he was just going to follow Donald Trump's orders in the same way that Donald Trump follows Vladimir Putin's orders. But see, here's the problem. At some point, Johnson realized that he was going against almost 80 years of United States history, starting with the beginning of NATO and the establishment of the United Nations and the development, really, of a program of collective security that has kept the world out of a nuclear war for 75 years from the establishment of NATO, all the way back to 1945. We're looking at 79 years. So, I mean, we're looking at a huge period of time where we have avoided a world war. Now, in the last 3 months, when the Republican Congress withheld the support from the people of Ukraine, well, it became a serious, not only battle, it became a serious race to see whether the Russians could take over Ukraine quickly enough while the weaponry ordered by the United States was not there. And they tried, they fought, they took over some land. They did kill many people, many. I mean, that's the real problem in all of this. If you're Mike Johnson and you're sitting here looking in the mirror and thinking you've done something great, you better also count the thousands of people who you, I'll say, murdered, because really that's the answer. They had the weapons, they had what they needed to push Russia back, possibly even to win the war. Instead of that, what they end up with? Well, they ended up with a lot of dead Ukrainians, and they ended up with a general feeling in Europe that the United States might not be trustworthy for years to come. And even though everybody is clapping and really celebrating what was done in Congress over the weekend, $60 billion going to Ukraine, here's the thing. It came too late for the people who have died. It came too late for some of what Russia has been able to accomplish. And now comes the fight back, the pushback from Ukraine to try to recover the advantage that they had. And there are a couple of problems that may come along with it. For example, how hard will Ukraine push into Russia in order to try to overcome what has occurred in the last several months? It is possible that any gigantic push into Russia by Ukraine might encourage Putin to really go berserk, because it's not like he's a very well-balanced person. You don't know what he'll do. But we do know that there are missiles, and there is artillery, and there are defensive weapons that will allow Ukraine to do things that, frankly, Vladimir Putin is likely to use as an excuse to once again be threatening the rest of the world, and especially the United States, with a nuclear attack. Now, somebody may want to blame Joe Biden for that, but that would be insanity. Joe Biden tried to get the weapons there so that the Ukrainians could methodically continue to push back against Russia. Now, I mean, if I were Ukraine, I'd push hard. I'd go all the way, because here's the other problem. You don't know what's going to happen with Congress. Even assuming I'm right, and I'll assume I am, assuming I'm right and Donald Trump is destroyed in this election, that doesn't guarantee what will happen in Congress. And if Congress, the House of Representatives, were to remain in the hands of Republicans, there's no telling what they might do to try to sabotage the efforts of Ukraine. Therefore, if you're Ukraine now, you have to take this opportunity to get done everything you can before November, because in November, you just don't know where things will be. You know you've got $60 billion now. So if I'm Vladimir Zelensky, I'm going to take advantage of every bit of it, and I'm going to move very aggressively against Russia. It's got dangers that go along with it. That's all I'm saying. I know they're going to do it because they're not stupid. They're going to do what's necessary, and they're going to push pretty hard, and they're probably going to have a great impact. The question is, at what point would Putin decide that he's got to up the ante with some substantially dangerous weapons, both in Ukraine and it could be even beyond Ukraine? Again, I don't think that's going to happen. And the reason I don't, ultimately, I think the ultimate support and protection for the West is you've got people in Russia, maybe unlike Vladimir Putin, who are more balanced, who have families, who might want the Soviet Union back. Maybe that's what they're thinking. But at the same time, they have to realize that it might be the end of their lives and their families' lives. So I think a lot of those people are going to say, Putin, take it easy. In the same way that people 60 years ago looked at Khrushchev and said, no, we don't want to go that far. You're pushing too much. This is too dangerous. So I think there is a protection in Russia against what Vladimir Putin would like to do. But I think it only comes from the fact that those people in Russia who are currently living would like to stay alive. And they know that if you push hard enough, well, then you've got a world war, and then no one can survive. So, you know, that I think that's sort of the balance to look at. But here's one other thing. Let's go back again to Mike Johnson. Because, you know, everybody on my side wants to say what a good guy he is. Some of them are hedging around it a little, but they basically want to say he did the right thing. Let's give him credit for it. And I'm only saying this. When they talk about Mike Johnson being profiles in courage, I think they really need to knock it off. Mike Johnson went all out for Donald Trump for as long as he could get away with it. I think really in the end, I think it was really he was frightened. I think they scared him into going the other direction. I don't think that Mike Johnson said, you know, I'm going to do the right thing. I want to look good in history. I think that what he did was he said, I better do something because I'm going to get my butt kicked. And he was going to get his butt kicked either way. Either by the Democrats and by the country if he withheld the aid from Ukraine. On the other hand, certainly now he's in danger of having that butt kicked by Republicans. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's pushing hard, and her buddies, I think there are three of them total right now, but I wouldn't be surprised to see substantially more soon. Not enough maybe to overthrow his speakership, but enough to throw around some chaos. And look, if you're Michael Johnson, you know, you may look at some of those people out there and think, you know, this is working out pretty well for me. I got some Democrats on my side, and I might be able to hold on to my speakership until November. And who knows, by then, maybe we'll win a few elections and maybe I'll stick around, which is probably not true anyway, but maybe that's what he's thinking. And in any event, he was frightened. He was scared into doing the right thing, and that's nice enough. He did the right thing, so I guess he's going to get some credit. But again, that's not what Profiles in Courage is about. Profiles in Courage, which, by the way, I mean, I read Profiles in Courage in 1963. I was 11 years old. Yeah, 11. And I read Profiles in Courage, and I was incredibly inspired by the stories. Stories of senators who took risks and didn't care about what happened to them and really only cared about what happened to the country. And I was also inspired by John Kennedy, who wrote all of this, although later on we realized it may have been Ted Sorensen who wrote it. Maybe he wrote it with Kennedy. Whatever it was, it had John Kennedy's name on it, and it was a great book. I mean, it was a great book when I was a kid. It's a great book now, and it's all about people who care about this country. And, you know, there was a time when everybody was saying that those of us against the war were anti-American. But we never felt that at the time anyway. We really didn't. Our feeling was that we were doing what needed to be done, some of it dangerous, fighting back against the draft, helping people to avoid the draft. I mean, there was some danger of going to jail, but in the end, you know, some did, most didn't, and it was a win for the good guys, but it did take some courage to fight back against militarism and the belief that the United States could get away with doing things that really were largely illegal. You know, if it all was based on the Gulf of Tonkin, we know that that didn't ever happen. So there's just nothing else to say except that if you want to be courageous, then do it. And do it for the right reasons. Do it because you believe in it. Now, again, I've had friends for years who have told me how courageous Lyndon Johnson was because of what he did on behalf of civil rights. We all know that as a Texas representative and senator, that Lyndon Johnson was pretty racist, really. I mean, he was Texas, and he was Texas through and through. And only when he became the vice president, and then John Kennedy died, and Lyndon Johnson saw this tremendous opportunity to become a great hero on behalf of civil rights, which is something he had never done, but nevertheless, he did it. Then he jumped into action and got the giant credit, which allowed Lyndon Johnson, even though he suffered historically because of Vietnam, it allowed him to become somebody who was seen as a little bit on this side and a little bit on that side. In other words, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. But to me, Lyndon Johnson was a bad guy who just grabbed on to what John Kennedy did with tremendous courage. And he used John Kennedy in an effort to catapult himself into this great historical position. Well, it didn't work totally because of what he did in Vietnam. On the other hand, it did allow people, which you hear today all the time, to say that Lyndon Johnson created all of these fabulous things. He created, you know, Medicare and voting rights, and solidified things having to do with Social Security. You know, the Great Society was, you know, everything that anybody could have wanted from, you know, the Franklin Roosevelt days. And, you know, comparing Lyndon Johnson to Franklin Roosevelt really sort of makes me sick, but I know people do that, and I understand the reason. They look at the programs and they compare them, and they say, well, look at this man. He, you know, added to the days of Roosevelt, but he really didn't have much choice. If he wanted to be the popular person that he wanted to be, he was really pushed in that direction once Kennedy was gone. And he took advantage of it in a smart way. But, you know, being smart, being clever, to me, that's not profiles in courage. Profiles in courage is somebody who knows what's right and does it at all costs. And to that point, I think what we really ought to be looking at today is Liz Cheney. You know, Liz Cheney was a bad person for my side. She opposed every government program to help people. She was in favor of cutting spending for everything that she ever came in contact with. Many of us believe that more spending is necessary so that the government can accomplish many of the good purposes that we think are necessary. But take all of that aside for a moment, because the day arrived when she saw what Donald Trump was and what he was doing and where he was headed. And she didn't hesitate for a minute. She immediately stepped up, knowing that it was the end of her days in Congress. And she acted. And she has continued to act, even after being out of Congress. She's unstoppable. She's in the New York Times today talking about the importance of the Supreme Court deciding very quickly on this immunity challenge in order to get the case moving forward in Washington, D.C. in Judge Chutkan's court. It's a great article that she wrote in the New York Times today, and she'll be hated for it doubly and triply by everybody on the right. But she said the right thing. She knew she had to. No one else was willing to do it because there's just certain people that don't want to take the chance. Liz Cheney has been a true profile in courage. She has taken chances, and she's lost, at least from the personal point of view. But she has won tremendously in the public arena in terms of helping the United States of America to move away from the greatest danger to democracy that this country has seen, probably fair to say, in its history. I can't even think of what has occurred in the past that was more dangerous than this. Certainly Joe McCarthy was a bad guy, but he never had the success that Donald Trump has had. 4 years in the presidency is a lot. And he's done a lot of damage to the United States and to our position in the world. And in the meantime, fighting back against that is profiles in courage, especially when you come from the Republican side. And she has not wavered for a moment. She has not done a Governor Sununu. I mean, that is about as pathetic as anything that you could imagine. And I don't even know how, assuming that he might have gone home and watched that in order to see, you know, what do I look like? How does it sound? I'll tell you, I'd have been 5 seconds into that, and I'd have turned it off because I wouldn't have wanted to recognize how bad Sununu looked with that idiotic defense of Trump, which essentially said this: 51% of the American people support Donald Trump, so I do. Well, first of all, there is no 51% support. That's not even true. But beyond that, is that the measure? Because if that's the measure, then I guess Hitler was right. Just go with Hitler. If you can get all those people out there raising their arms in the air and yelling Sieg Heil, then I guess it doesn't matter what the principle is. Just do it. Go for it all the way. And anybody who imagines that Donald Trump is not that dangerous, well, you're just not listening to Donald Trump. When the man says, we are poisoning the blood of America with immigrants who come from Africa, I think that it's very clear that it's anti-black support that really, it moves Trump. It motivates him. It just keeps him going. You know, the Proud Boys, the QAnon, all these groups, which he says he's never even heard of before. But somehow these people have heard of him and they love him. And they're doing things every day around the United States that harm people in this country. And Donald Trump doesn't take one moment of hesitation before he jumps to support exactly what they support. And just, he withholds their name for a minute. I guess, you know, if you don't call them the SS, then somehow it's okay. But we've got that kind of a problem here. And in fact, not only do we have that kind of a problem, But we also have a situation where we can look at our country and we can say, maybe now we finally understand how Germany became what it did. How does that happen? How do people cave in to something so dangerous and talk themselves into believing that it won't be a problem, that we can solve it, we can handle it, that Trump won't be here in a year or two or three or four or whatever, and then we'll sort of smooth over the edges? Is that what they think? I don't know. I just know this. I know that there are many people out here who have written very clearly about how this is an echo or a duplication of Hitler in the 1930s. And I can tell you, if not for what Johnson did this weekend, we would surely be watching this crazed man in Russia first overtaking Ukraine and then flexing his muscles to see what else can I get my hands on throughout Europe. And everybody pretty much knows that it would be Poland, it would be Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. Everybody knows. And of course, Finland and Sweden knew, because they acted very quickly to get themselves into NATO. And honestly, without the United States' support here, this would be a different world, a dangerous world. And then one last thing I want to say on that, and then I'm going to go to some other things after we talk about some business here. But, you know, thinking that the entire world is deaf to the stories that come out of the United States, it's foolishness. The world knows and the world fears what may be coming from this country. I could sit here and tell you, and I will, that Donald Trump doesn't have a chance of winning any election. That, you know, when you've got 60% of women to 35 in favor of Joe Biden, trust me, this stuff is going to break so hard against Trump in the end, it won't even be a contest. And really, as people watch Donald in the courtroom, it's not helping the man. The man is coming apart at the seams in that courtroom. And, you know, if you want to believe that somehow Joe Biden is, you know, the crime family and Hunter Biden is the equivalent of what, look, you could say all those things, but you also know it's not true, because you know that Donald Trump has been a true criminal for 40 years. And now it's coming to get him in 88 felony indictments. The first 34 currently unraveling in front of us in a way that will not be good for this guy. I will also say, at some point, I think I'm going to start feeling sorry for him, really, because I'm sort of that kind of a person. I'll feel sorry for him after I know that he hasn't got any chance of becoming president of the United States. At that point, then I feel sorry for the guy. He's a pathetic figure. But on the other hand, that pathetic figure somehow found his way into the White House the first time. And so clearly everybody's got to be alert so that that's not repeated. But I'm pretty sure, very sure, that it won't be. Okay, so let me talk about dinner time. And soon, you'll be able to enjoy dinner in two places at once. First, at 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road, which of course is right here in the valley, and that is Wendy's, which they have the best food. They really have great food. They have wings that people love. I'm not a wing guy, but people talk about the wings, and they love them. They talk about Well, they talk about a lot of things. They talk about the smoked meats. That's not my thing either. But I'll tell you that I love the baby back ribs. The baby back ribs you cannot beat. But everybody has the thing that they like. And, you know, at Wendy's, it's sort of like that. There's so many different options, and they're all great. The pizza, the patty melts. Yeah, I like patty melts. Hamburgers, cheeseburgers. It's all great at Wendy's. And soon, you'll also be able to go to Defiance and have Wendy's as well. Although at this point, I'm going to have to check with the guys. I don't think they can get Ben in both places at the same time. But short of that, Wendy's is great. And you'll check them out. 18,000 Chesterfield Airport Road. You'll love Wendy's. Now, I was out today to see Al at 4506 Hampton. That's Jules on Hampton. And, you know, every time I walk through that place, it is amazing. They have got unbelievable jewelry there. I mean, a lot of jewelry. It is a beautiful store. And they sell everything from the designs that they create to designs that other people want themselves. They tell the people there, they tell the Jules on Hampton crew, this is how I want it done, and they get what they want. So you can go either way at Jules on Hampton. And on top of that, you may have a watch like I do, 45 years old. And guess what? They can fix it instantly. They're good. They know what they're doing. This is a terrific jewelry store in every respect. Al is the owner on site, of course. It's always this great opportunity to do business with somebody who owns the business and is at the business. Al and his son AJ and all the rest of the crew, this is a great place to deal with jewelry. And let's say, for example, you want to buy and sell coins or sell jewelry to them. You can do it all, and honestly, they are good. Prices are great, and they are at 4506 Hampton. That's Jewels on Hampton. Now, right down the road, just get on Highway 40, right down the road, headed east, and you'll find yourself very quickly at the St. Louis Suit Company, where the ties are $5. Now, I promise you, you're never going to find better ties at any price. But at the St. Louis Suit Company, they are $5. The suits are inexpensive. The ties are amazing. The only thing they have, there's just one thing they haven't got, and that's the only complaint. No Chucks. I have to get my Chucks somewhere else. But other than that, the St. Louis Suit Company is phenomenal. They have been there for 29 years. And if you know all the famous people that buy their suits and clothing at the St. Louis Suit Company, you'd be blown away. You wouldn't believe it, because they've just been around that long and everybody goes there. It's just a great place. Corner of Central and Forsyth in Clayton, and that is the St. Louis Suit Company. Like I said, 29 years. Jay and Nick are waiting for you there. And that's the great thing about these businesses. You go in, you spend some money, and you end up with a friend. I mean, some people can't get a friend. But in our case, you can go and get a friend. You don't have to pay that much. It's a pretty good idea, you know. Buy a friend, get a suit. St. Louis Suit Company, Central and Forsyth in Clayton. You'll love them. Okay. I want to talk to you about some dangerous things going on in our world. And it doesn't have anything to do with Vladimir Putin. And it doesn't have anything to do with Donald Trump. Well, not directly anyway. And it has to do, first, with plastic. Second, with the rising temperature in the waters, in the oceans, and three, the potential, the likelihood that somewhere down the line, we are going to be looking again at a pandemic situation. Now, the good news is that unlike Donald Trump, Joe Biden spends money. And there is a considerable amount of money that's being spent right now, first of all, to try to get a grip on this plastic situation. And secondly, to look down the road to what we might have to do if we have to deal with another pandemic. And, you know, I hate to hear people say, oh, the Chinese did it and we're never going to have another problem. Because it's not so simple. The Chinese didn't just do it. Now, maybe we all did it when it comes to the kind of research that was being done there. That's very possible that as a result of an accident, this gain-of-function research, I mean, yes, there are some dangers in it. Because the dangers are this. You're trying to create a situation where you get an idea of what you might have a problem with, and then you deal with it before you get the problem. In the case of COVID, apparently it didn't work, and we ended up paying a price, a very high price. 7 million people worldwide, 1 million people in the United States. I mean, it wasn't what Donald Trump said, you know, one guy that sort of got lost somewhere and we wouldn't have to worry, we'd all be fine. And then, of course, we found out shortly afterwards that Trump was lying about that because he knew how dangerous that it was and he knew what was going to happen. But as he told Bob Woodward, he didn't want to let anybody know because he was afraid that he might scare someone. And in the meantime, 1 million Americans died. 1 million. While he was playing games with bleach and other kind of idiotic drugs that were used on horses and the rest of it. I mean, the man is seriously ill. And luckily, he's not running anything. And, you know, you might look at Joe Biden and say, he's old, he's tired, and he may be old and tired. I mean, he looks old, I'll say that. I know the numbers are there, he's 81. So, yeah, that's a problem for him. It's not a problem for us because everything he's doing involves hiring the right people to get the job done. And he has got fabulous people who are working on future problems before we even have to deal with them. And hopefully, not Joe Biden, because he's not a scientist, but hopefully our very best scientists will be doing the work that's necessary to try to set the stage for being able to deal with these problems down the line. But let me back up for a second away from the diseases. Let me talk about the plastic. You know, I've talked about the plastic for so long. And the reason is pretty obvious. You know, there's a spot out in the middle of the ocean where the plastic, because of the currents, comes together in one gigantic plastic graveyard. And it is like three times the size of Texas. And by now, it may even be larger than that. I mean, it's huge. And it's growing. And it is dangerous. And I heard some things this morning from some of the doctors, and I didn't even know all of this. For example, they are investigating people who have died. They're taking their bodies apart and going through the tissues. And they're finding that these people have plastics all through their bodies. They have found that we are ingesting plastic in a way that people just didn't even realize. And really, it shouldn't be all that surprising because if we've created this gigantic mess in the middle of the ocean, then clearly we have enough plastic to be doing this damage in other ways as well. And there's plastic in breast milk. I mean, there's plastic in everything. We are killing ourselves with plastic. It is that dangerous. And, you know, every day you go to the grocery store, I certainly go, and I get those plastic bags. And I'm not stupid. I mean, I know that if I would stop getting the plastic bags, and if everybody else is getting them, then there's still going to be all the plastic. I mean, I can't fight the plastic myself. But the country can do it. And Joe Biden, not personally, he's too old, he's too tired, I understand all that, but he has got the people together who are the experts on this, and he has given them money, and he's put them to work to get rid of these plastics, to find the way to just eliminate this out of our lives. We have to do it. If we don't, we're going to pay a price. And just like, you know, I talked a little earlier about the price that Ukraine paid for Speaker Johnson and his fears of Donald Trump for months, his refusal to do what was right because he feared that Trump would get him, and then finally he caved in. Well, thousands died. Okay. Well, people are dying now from these plastics. And it's not going to be me, and it's not going to be you. I mean, we can go out and get a cloth carrier and carry our groceries home. But if everybody else is doing this, then I assure you that it's going to continue to build up in the environment in a way that is extraordinarily dangerous. Now, in addition, we know that the water is going up in temperature, and that is extremely dangerous because it kills the coral reefs. And our ecology being what it is, you need the coral reefs. Again, I'm no meteorologist, I'm no oceanographer, whatever the name is for it. I can tell you this, we have people out here who are those things and who can do the job, and we can pay them, and we can put them to work, and they can give us some really good ideas on how to save ourselves after we save our democracy, how to save ourselves from the pollution, from the damage that we're doing to our world and to ourselves. Because I can tell you this, if we've got plastic all in us, if we're ingesting it, if we're giving it to our children to eat, it's not good. It's not healthy, and it's going to get us if we keep doing it. We need to stop. We need to find a way to back off of all of this, and there is a way. There is a way. We need to come up with the money. We've got it. Listen, this is another thing. I love when people say, we're broke, we don't have any money, we don't know what to do. No, this is the richest country in the world. We are respected by everybody in the world. They'll lend us anything that we want. Any money that we want to borrow, we can borrow. Now, when the interest rates are down, we also need to go out and restructure our debt, because that's a problem. But it's only a problem because people didn't do what should have been done. Could Donald Trump have done it? Absolutely. Did he know that he should do it? He did know, because he told people publicly. He announced that we should do it, and then he never did it. Just like everything, just like the infrastructure week and all that nonsense. And this man is the biggest liar on the planet. And I have learned one thing, if I've learned nothing else. Anything that Donald Trump says, even if it sounds like it might be okay, don't believe it. Because there's nothing that he's ever done that is right. There's nothing that benefits this country that Donald Trump has done. You know, he cut some taxes for billionaires. How's that helped us? What did Joe Biden do? Joe Biden came in and delivered tax credits to families that just changed their lives, changed their availability to child care, to health care for little kids. I mean, he did all kinds of things with those tax credits. I know he's old. I agree, he's old. But guess what? It didn't require him to do anything. He didn't have to jump a fence to establish those tax credits. He was able to do it as an old man. And he talked about it as an old man. And he talked about it again at the State of the Union message as an old man. A lot of people said, you know, that old man sounds pretty darn good for an old man. Could there be better? Sure. And we know there will be. We're going to get somebody young to show up. There's no doubt about it. Might be Kamala Harris. I know they don't like her either. I don't even know what their excuse is for her. Maybe it's the Kamala Harris crime family. I mean, that's for all of them, that's all they know how to say, except for the fact that Donald Trump does have a crime family. That's the irony of all this. The guy who's talking about this all the time, he is the guy with the crime family. But they're taking care of that. And, you know, again, this is so nice. I mean, here we are at 4:53 in the afternoon. You can go home and relax, listen to the news, listen to the reports on what happened in the courtroom. And know this, they're going to be right back in that courtroom tomorrow. And we have a system of justice, which, believe me, when you get into that courtroom, when you get past all the motions and you get past all the appeals and you get down to the real trial, and we're there, well, then it's different. Because then you got 12 people. And I don't know how many of you have watched the movie with Henry Fonda, 12 Angry Men. I have to tell you, juries are amazing. They really are. And that was a great story of how juries manage to find the answers, and they do. They may not always be the smartest people. They may not be the most technologically savvy people. They may not know how every little intricate thing works in the world of technology, for example. They may not understand all of the aspects of the law. But when the prosecutors tell a story and the judge decides what's okay, what's not fair, they get it to the jury sits down, deliberates over it all, and they are excellent at finding the right answer. They do a terrific job of it. Our system is phenomenal, and it's really a shame that there are people who really want to denigrate our system. Because they want to say that Donald Trump is being the victim. We're doing horrible things to this man. We're destroying him. Listen, they are now going to take care of this. They're going to find the answer. They're going to find this guy, I believe, guilty. And he's going to start spending some time in jail. Now, the important thing, aside from the time in jail, I've already talked about it a little tonight, and that is the country's health. So You know, that's something that we ought to be looking at. But the good news on that is you don't even have to think about it tonight. Because whether you think about it or not, I promise you, that old man who can barely walk and who sometimes slurs some words and sometimes forgets what he wanted to say and sometimes just says things that are just so overboard that they make everybody crazy, even though they're generally things that, you know, he believes them and he just normally maybe wouldn't say them. But sometimes Joe Biden has done that in his history. And okay, he's old and he's got this problem with, you know, as they say, the gaffes. But guess what? While we're sitting here worrying about democracy, which we should, he's worrying about how to get the plastic out of your kids' breast milk and how to get the plastic out of your body so that you don't end up with cancer and anything else that is going to come from it. I mean, look, our government knows that this is a problem and they're working on it. They are putting money to it right now. And you don't even have to think about it. But you need to think about this. That old man who drives you crazy every time you watch him falling over himself, he's getting the job done. Because he's got a lot of very young, smart people who are working with him. They know about technology. They know about communicable diseases. They know about the dangers that face us all in the world. They understand how the environment is creating some potential problems and that we need to find ways to address those problems. The United States is doing a fairly good job of it. And the real trouble is coming from, for example, China and India. Someday they'll get with it as they grow smarter and stronger in ways that we've already achieved. But if it doesn't happen pretty fast, it may be too late for some of us. So we shall see. By the way, I really want to thank, for example, Greg Carell, and I know others have been talking about talking about Passover, and I think that's very nice. And you know, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about, and in fact, I've got a lot to say about it, the Jewish situation at Columbia University. It's disturbing. Of course it is. But let me say that this is a complicated problem like everything. And I'm going to say some things about this tomorrow that will probably curl some people's hair, not mine because I don't have enough left. But look, none of these things are ever as simple as they are presented to us. And so I'm going to spend a little time tomorrow and talk about the Jewish situation. I've got a really excellent guest to come on to talk about this as well. And we'll see if he's available tomorrow, or it might be a different day that he comes. But I'm going to talk about this tomorrow right from the outset. Although I may begin with Donald and then shift over to the Jewish situation. But again, thanks everybody for the good wishes on Passover, and that is important. There was a great article in the New York Times by one of the columnists about the ways in which Passover represent an important way that we can find to do good for people by thinking about, you know, some of the horrible things that are done in the world and the ways that we can push back against oppression. But that's not what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. I got something else in mind. Anyway, we'll do that tomorrow. Right now, for Wendy's, for Jules on Hampton, for the St. Louis Suit Company, I'm Mark Kaysen. This is Showdown. Good night.